Inspiring solutions to save America, one show at a time. Are you ready to get on board?
They believe that they can destroy this bond that exists between you and Trump if they somehow make Trump look bad, make Trump look like a reprobate, embarrass you about Trump. They can't do it because you came before Trump. Desperately want Trump gone, and I know that they desperately want it codified that Trump cannot run again, because make no mistake, they remain scared to death of you, and they remain scared to death of Trump. Trump, 75 million, 80 million votes, and I'm going to tell you, you're not going anywhere. Even if Trump does, you're not. Which I think remains one of our big campaign strengths going forward. They can't separate you from Trump. And more importantly, they can't separate you from the ideas. They can't separate you from MAGA. They can't separate you from Make America Great Again.
From sea to shining sea, 3 hours of bold truth and excellence. The Wendy Bell Radio Program.
Hey, hey, hour number two of the Wendy Bell Radio Program. It is an honor to be with you as always, Monday through Friday, 15 hours. Remember, you can get the Wendy Bell Radio Network app and watch the live stream behind the scenes. Right now, we're live on Newsmax N2 channel and all across the Fruited Plain on the radio. Welcome home, my friends. So I ran into this very interesting, and it's only like 3.5, maybe 4 minutes. It's Tucker Carlson talking with Marjorie Taylor Greene. And I like both of them. I enjoy how hard they fight. I think it's been very interesting to see this peeling off of just basically Republican ideology, right? So you have conservative and then you have Republican. I think there's a difference. I think conservatism is different than being a part of the GOP. I believe MAGA, this idea of exceptionalism, of greatness, not just for people who vote like I do, but for all Americans, that's conservative to me. I believe Tucker Carlson peeled off of Fox, obviously had to chart that path where he could say what he wants and be who he is and go and interview the people you and I want to hear from so we can decide. Like us interviewing Stuart Rhodes the other day, the Oath Keepers founder, from prison. You need to hear these people. Media, you heard Eric Adams teaching them, hey, stop talking about crime on the subway, because your perception is everybody else's reality. If we just stop covering it, then it goes away. No, it doesn't. So the prevailing conversation here in these 4 minutes is about whether or not House Speaker Mike Johnson is compromised. And you don't want to think that. When you're not somebody whose values can blow in the wind and just change, if it's not a malleable thing for you, it's really hard for you to understand or to even imagine people who would sacrifice what they believe in for some good that comes to them, whether it be a promotion, whether it becomes money, whether it's whatever. We're not going to tell on you about something compromising that we got on you. So is Speaker Mike Johnson being blackmailed? Tucker Carlson asking Marjorie Taylor Greene that very question. And she says what I think a lot of us are wondering and thinking aloud. How can you have voted for this minibus, part of the omnibus monstrosity, which funds all these radical leftist ideologies that we as conservatives fundamentally reject? Audio soundbite one.
Mike Johnson has completely changed his character in a matter of about 5 months after he has become Speaker of the House. Mike Johnson is a Christian. He called himself a conservative, always has been. He's a Republican member, but yet here we are after the minibus was passed just almost 2 weeks ago in Washington. And now with the $60 billion going to a war in Ukraine that Americans, 70% of Americans do not support it. That's the most recent polling. 70% of Americans and the majority of our majority of Republicans do not support funding Ukraine. People want to see a peace deal in Ukraine, not murdering more Ukrainians and more Russians. This needs to end. But no, Mike Johnson has made a complete departure of who he is and what he stands for. And to the point where people are literally asking, is he blackmailed? What is wrong with him? Because right. He's completely disconnected with what we want.
That's not something you hear every day. That's not something you would get on Fox News. That's not a conversation you would have over on MSNBC. It took Tucker Carlson taking the detour to be able to provide that. So he asks her, what do you think? Is he being blackmailed? Listen.
Do you think he is being blackmailed?
I have no idea. I can't comprehend, Tucker, what radically changes a man. I mean, if we break down the second part of basically an omnibus, let's break that down. So Mike Johnson is pro-life. In the second part of the omnibus, just less than 2 weeks ago, he funded full-term abortion clinics. Full-term abortion clinics. He funded the trans agenda on children. I mean, how does that even happen from a Christian conservative Republican speaker? He did nothing for the southern border, did nothing to secure the border. And this comes on the heels of Laken Riley being brutally murdered. This came on the heels of a video that was running on loop on social media where illegal aliens had rushed our border, ran over Texas National Guard, ran over Border Patrol agents in order to invade our country. These were military-aged men, by the way. He did nothing to secure a border. It's the number one issue in the world. He completely changed who he was, funded the FBI, gave him a brand new building, fully funded the Department of Justice that is persecuting everyone on the right and actually targeting our presidential candidate for election this year, literally trying to put him in jail the rest of his life. We don't know who Mike Johnson is anymore, so there's no, I can't comprehend it.
Can't comprehend how four of the top five Republicans in House leadership were part of the 101 who voted for that crap bill. Tom Emmer, Steve Scalise, Elise Stefanik, and Mike Johnson. And Tucker then carries the ball further and says there is a chameleon-like nature of these double lives a lot of people in the GOP are living. And we got to talk about that. Go.
I have noticed just from living in Washington for so long that a lot of the top decision makers are lying about their personal lives. And there's something, you know, really amiss there. Mm-hmm. I would definitely say Mitch McConnell would be among those. And there does seem to be a connection between the creepiness of your personal life and the deception around your personal life and your willingness to vote with the other side. I mean, have you noticed this at all?
Isn't that a fascinating question? All these things coming out. Staffers having sex in Senate conference rooms. Allegations of orgies, of drug-fueled parties. And what else? What else is going on there? And so here's Marjorie Taylor Greene saying exactly what we have said on this program. It's predicated on blackmail and bribery. And she says it here.
Absolutely. And I think it's something that the American people are extremely aware of because none of it makes sense. Yeah. How do you become Speaker of the House? And let's look at that. It's basically like there's Establishment Washington, runs like a company. We could call it the firm. Well, Mike Johnson just got promoted to senior partner at the firm because he has been obeying their every single demand. He funded the military. He funded the military-industrial complex and everything that they want done. He funded Biden's open border invasion. He funded the Green New Deal, the climate agenda. He funded full-term abortion clinics, the trans agenda on kids. He funded every single thing that the firm stands for and what they're trying to push on the rest of the world. This is the agenda for the rest of the world. And they are not, they're not hiding it one single bit.
Isn't that fascinating? These are the conversations that off mainstream media airwaves, where fewer people are paying attention, these conversations are spreading. Because it does not take a rocket scientist to see one of these things is not like the others. What do they have on these folks? I don't know. But they don't vote the way they say they will. And we need to do something to carve these people out. Now, coming up later in the broadcast, I think it's a very interesting furtherance of this conversation. Matt Gaetz is going to join in this conversation. Matt Gaetz, who was the prime impetus behind the 15 votes for Kevin McCarthy to get the gavel and then for him to be vacated and to basically leave. What does he say now about trying to vacate Mike Johnson? Why he says no is very interesting. And you're going to get that answer moments away on the Wendy Bell Radio program. So elections, all obviously, we know, have consequences. Being a dirtbag, being a scumbag, being a scoundrel, being corrupt, being a box-checking dope, that has consequences too. Diversity, equity, inclusion is getting such a bad name, isn't it? Because all of these heroes who ostensibly have been championed as extraordinary because of who they sleep with or what their skin looks like have failed miserably. They've been abject failures. Meantime, you have actual Black and Hispanic leaders out there who are extraordinary. They just happen to be conservative. Winsome Sears, right? Why doesn't anybody talk about that woman? Here's the New York Post. This is great because Democrats see it too. Anti-Israel squad representative Jamal Bowman trails his rival, a dude named George Latimer, by 17 points. Say what? 17 points? Far left squad representative Jamal Bowman is in deep trouble in his bid for a third term in the House. In a shocking new poll. I don't know if it's shocking. I think it's inspiring. I think it makes me have pause. I think I feel like, whoa, holy cow, everything's not totally lost in this country. Shocking new poll obtained exclusively by the Post. Westchester County Executive George Latimer leads Jamal Bowman 52-35% among Democratic primary voters in the 16th congressional district. That's not even close. That's not like, ooh, we're pouring it on, my man. You're the incumbent. You're screwed, Jamal. And it makes me feel kind of tingly inside. I'm just going to admit, kind of creepy, but I like it. Among Democrats who voted in at least three of the last four primaries, Latimer's lead grows to 21 percentage points, 56-35. Brock.
Jamal Bowman better pull some kind of fire alarm because he's in trouble.
What the hell kind of lever is out there that he can pull and be like, it worked last time? Sorry, brother. 56-35, according to the survey conducted by veteran Democratic pollster Mark Melman for the pro-Latimer Democratic majority for Israel. Maybe the pollster's biased. I'm sure all of them are. It's interesting. And it's got to be scaring the crap out of Jamal Bowman. Hey, Jamal Bowman, I know you probably don't know this, but you suck, and we know that you suck. So pack your bags, brother! Among Democrats who say they both know, or they know both Latimer and Bowman, 76% of the primary electorate. Latimer's lead expands even further to 26 points. These aren't people who are like, Jamal, who? Who's that? They know. They know he sucks. I don't need to belabor that point, do I? It is delicious. This, similarly. Aw, Ilhan. How are you, honey? You feeling confident? You might not want to be. This is exciting. Headline alphanews.org. Poll shows potentially close race between Ilhan Omar and Don Samuels. Samuel said the poll, quote, supports what we already know. We can beat Ilhan Omar. Go ahead.
They're going to use Democrat tactics to do it.
I don't know what you mean. What do you mean, Brock?
Independents and Republicans can vote now.
This is
what the GOP has needed to do for a long time.
This is a beautiful thing when Republicans and independents show up at an open primary and sink someone who sucks too. Democratic congressional candidate Don Samuels, potentially tight race against Congresswoman Ilhan Omar, according to a new poll released by his campaign. Running in Minnesota's 5th congressional, Samuels is challenging Omar for the district's Democratic nomination. In the new poll, when likely Democratic primary voters were initially asked about their preferences between Omar and Samuels, 49% said Omar, 30% said Samuels, 21% said undecided. However, the same poll found that the margin shifted to a tie between the two, 41-41, after the same voters heard Samuel's message of being a progressive and pragmatic alternative to Omar without the divisive comments and the history of taking unpopular votes. That's before what Brock is alluding to happened. Speaking about his campaign to win a seat in the U.S. House, Samuels said this poll supports what we already know. We can beat her. And as Brock said, what's beautiful about this, you got Republicans, you have independents. Minnesota conducts primaries using the open primary system. And as such, the scant number of independents and Republicans who live in the 5th District could choose to vote in the August Democratic primary election for either Samuels or Omar. Given Samuels and Omar were separated by fewer than 2,500 votes in 2022, any outside influence from independents and Republicans could dramatically shake up the race. Minnesota's 5th congressional district is the most left-wing district in the state and one of the most left-wing U.S. House districts in the entire country. I'm thinking if I'm a Republican there, feels like how I feel in my neighborhood in Pittsburgh, right? I got some work to do. I got some neighbors to find and some voting to go and accomplish. Quick timeout. When we come back on the Wendy Bell Radio program, big data polling, Rich Barris breaking down Nebraska, all of it. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back to the Wendy Bell Radio program. One of the things when I don't understand stories, when I'm up above and I'm looking down and it's not all connecting for me, you need somebody who's he's down in the data. And I can't think of anybody who is more apropos to bring in than national pollster Rich Barris from Big Data Polling. Welcome back, my friend.
Thanks for having me back, Wendy. It's good to be here. How are you?
I'm doing great. You know, we've been talking about this situation in Nebraska.
Yeah.
Can you help me out? Can you talk to me about this and explain what's going on, what has gone on in Nebraska, and even tying in some of your Rust Belt polling or whatever you've got? Talk to me.
Yeah. So what people need to understand first about Nebraska is that this would not have worked or this would not have mattered, I would say, if the census didn't in 2020, there was a census done. And census, of course, decides a few things: government spending, congressional districts, but also electoral votes. And to put it simply without getting in the weeds, it's easier for Donald Trump to win the presidency now than it was in 2016 or 2020 because certain blue states lost electoral votes. It used to be that a Republican needed a full sweep, but now there's an easier combination if the president carries Arizona, Georgia, and Wisconsin. He's above 270. He doesn't need Michigan or Pennsylvania anymore as he used to. However, let's say, Wendy, because we all know how this goes, right, with Democrats. Let's say, or even the polling's wrong, for instance, and I'm, you know, it's a big if, but let's say it. And Trump loses Wisconsin, Pennsylvania, and Michigan. Then if he carried Arizona and Georgia, if Nebraska went from, because Nebraska and Maine are two states that allocate electoral votes, not just a few based on the statewide winner, but because in their congressional districts as well. If Nebraska goes to winner take all, then Biden would not be able to receive the electoral vote that Nebraska won. It's been getting much more liberal. So he would not receive that electoral vote anymore, and it would block him from 270. That would make it a 269 tie, which would throw it where? To the House. And who's in control of the House? Republicans. So honestly, it's a smart move. Democrats these days are, you know, doing everything in their power, keeping people off ballots, throwing people in jail, throwing supporters in jail. It's not exactly a rash move for Republicans to do this. There's going to be a press conference soon.
That is interesting. That's very interesting. Tell me, and you have the ideas of what state needs to do this for one candidate to do that. What is there a most pivotal state? Is there a most pivotal area? The must win?
You know, here's the kicker. They call it the Keystone State for a reason. And I know that the math now is there. So, you know, a Republican technically does not need it. Like I just explained, Wisconsin tends to vote a little bit more to the right. But Wendy, the polling we've been doing, Wisconsin can always be very tricky. And sometimes it polls, not sometimes, often, it polls to the left of some of these other battleground states and then ends up voting to the right of it. It's very notorious for this. It's been a pain for a long time. There are several reasons for that. But I still am a believer that if you carry Pennsylvania, then you're going to get, I mean, there is the last eight presidential elections. Let me put it this way. The last eight presidential elections, all three of those states have voted together. So the last time they did not is when Wisconsin bucked Herbert Walker Bush and voted for Michael Dukakis, while Pennsylvania and Michigan voted for, of course, Herbert Walker Bush. So, you know, I am still a big believer in the Keystone strategy. If you win the Keystone State, you're going to win.
You and I talked last time about the potential for Trump to flip some of these super blue areas. And I think we can agree that California is, wow, that would be so outrageous. But I'm really wondering if you have changed your thoughts at all about New York. You said you could see possibly that happening.
Yeah, I mean, it's a very, very heavy lift. We'll have to see who's actually on the ballot, which will matter, of course. But I'll tell you, Wendy, because I trust this pollster, and he gets it wrong, like we all do sometimes, but it's not because he's a bad actor. I've been thinking, you know, I get asked about New York a lot, and Siena is not exactly a right-leaning poll. Siena College has New York anywhere from, you know, 8 or 9 to 15 points, depending on the ballot scenario, who's on the ballot. And I have been thinking, well, if that's true, then how close is New Jersey?
Right.
You know, I mean, honestly. It was only 5 points against Bush v. Kerry. It was fairly close, and it only became very liberal in the Obama era, and it was one of only two states that voted more for Obama in 12 than it did for 08. The other one was Hawaii. And Emerson College last week released a poll showing New Jersey is 7 points. So, I mean, if New Jersey is 7 points, your world is falling apart. Yeah, it really is true. I mean, if you're a Democrat, if you're Biden, and that state is that close, then New York is also at least cut in half. There will be a popular vote win by Trump, and you're probably going to lose Minnesota. You know, we're getting to a place where potentially there's going to be a really big realignment. You'll have states like New Hampshire who will remain blue and resisted, while others that have been voting blue for so long will swing 10, 15 points, like New York and New Jersey, if this continues, I'm saying. you know, if the current environment we're in right now continues, that could very well happen. You could have a situation where New Hampshire votes to the left of New Jersey. It's crazy.
You have to tell me, what do you think the Democrats can do to stop this train? Like, what's the play? What can they do?
Well, organization is their best bet, honestly. They are light years ahead of Republicans who are trying to catch up. But the fact of the matter is these people know how to, you know, they know how to ballot harvest. They know how to gather. And you can close, you know, I don't want to throw a number out there, but you can close a 4-point lead if there is a turnout deficit to begin with, and then you ballot harvest the way they do. It's very impressive. You know, we obviously studied it after 2020, but again after 22 when they outperformed the polls, we took an even deeper look. It's really, really impressive, and they also have everyone on their side, Wendy. So subtle things that we don't even notice. You'll get a Apple News notification that essentially says something nasty about Republicans, and then you'll also get a notification that reminds you not to forget to either sign up for the mail-in ballot list if you haven't already, or return your ballot. And it would cost Republicans a fortune to essentially duplicate what they have media and big tech doing for them. And then they, of course, have the ground game to back it up. So I'm not sure, you know, there's anything that can happen. The economy's not going to boom in, you know, 6 or 7 months. And maybe it will. But I'm saying typically that's not the case. The world is certainly not going to, you know, stop burning. That's just the policy that they implemented. So the only thing they can do is try to make their opponent more unpalatable than them and hope the organization carries them through.
How about Republicans? What could what do Republicans have to do to not screw this up?
Okay, Republicans really need to take their head out of their butts. They wasted $500 million and a lot of time on a primary that they were never going to stop the front runner from winning. So they're already behind because of that. And people like me who pointed that out always got attacked by the supporters of other candidates. But it was the reality. And now here we are, right, Wendy? The fact is, with Trump on the ballot, Republicans have a unique opportunity to get these low propensity, unlikely voters, even non-registered voters. I have never in my lifetime been in a situation where Republicans were the ones who had, like, the normies who don't really participate in politics overwhelmingly backing them. It used to be the other way around. And if Democrats would go out and register them and then get them to the polls, then they could have a shocker. Barack Obama did it in 08. And it's a gold mine out there for Republicans right now. And I would argue, by the way, that New Jersey, a lot of people were afraid of auto registration in New Jersey, but it can, in some situations, it can force those people, whether they like it or not, to get registered. And that at least begins the process to try to go out and get them. And that is a big part of the reason why New Jersey has, you know, lurched. I wouldn't say, you know, dramatically shifted, but lurched steadily to the right since they implemented that law. And I used to live there. I know. I mean, there's a ton of Republican-leaning or Republican would-be voters that just don't participate, Wendy. They don't do it. They've given up on the process. If I showed your listeners the numbers or showed you the number, you would be stunned at the low 1.7 million targets in Michigan. And where are these people? Why hasn't anybody done anything to reach out to them? That is the task Republicans have. Trump's a turnout machine, but could you imagine if they combined both?
Right. Right. And I was fascinated in 2008, Barack Obama really started this movement on college campuses. It's wrapped around the guise of register to vote, get out the vote, but it is vote Democrat. And he's got like 1,800 colleges and universities with chapters that do this, ostensibly funded by us. Like, the Republicans don't have a flip side to that.
No, they don't. And it's really, they have institutional support that Republicans do not have. And I've been trying to explain this for a while. It's going to take a lot of money, and it's going to take a lot of effort. And there are things that can be done this time that could be very, very effective. Look, Wendy, there's an organization I know of in Michigan, for instance, right? And Republicans would be wise to duplicate its model everywhere. And what they're basically doing is they know Republicans don't like to get up and knock on doors. It's for people who are listening and don't know this and have never participated. Republicans are notoriously complacent.
Yes.
And they're not like Democrats.
Yes.
They pay for door knockers.
Yes.
Where Democrats have volunteers that go out and do it for them with, you know, so, and when they do get paid, they get paid well. So there's got to be a different way to motivate people to do it. If you really, and people, you hear people say this all the time, but it's true, if there was an organized way to leverage Republican voters or high interest voters to look at their own circles. You ever hear the expression, you can change the world, but you got to start with your corner of the world? You know, if you want to change the world, you got to start with your own corner of the world. Well, that's basically it. You know, believe me, you have friends. Believe me, you have work colleagues that you're friendly with. Believe me, you have family members who are registered or not and don't vote. And it's, you know, that we poll these people all the time. And their number one reason is, my vote doesn't matter. It doesn't make a difference. You can change their mind. You can get them to vote. It's not that hard. You just have to do it. And if, you know, I mean, think about it. Put the numbers together. I mean, if, you know, 1,000 voters did that in, or 2,000 voters did that in Arizona, Donald Trump would have closed the margin.
Right.
It's about five people.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's not that, it's not that difficult.
Right.
But it should be organized. It really should.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of introspection we have. Can you hang for one segment? Because I've got a quick question for you. On the flip side of this break, you did the majority of your polling via phone. Is that correct?
I do. We do mix. It's called mixed mode. But yeah, I mean, in this case, most, if they weren't interviewed on the phone, then they received a message.
Okay. I'm going to ask you this, and I'm going to let you percolate on this during the break. What's something that you have heard recently that even you were not expecting? All right. I want to talk about trends, ladies and gentlemen. These stories on the outside that folks aren't discussing. We will next on the Wendy Bell Radio Network. All right, let's waste no time and get back to our big data polling guru, Rich Barris. Rich, now I know you hear from a lot of people when you're taking, you know, when you're polling their political ideas, how they are leaning. What is something that you have heard from someone recently that just knocked your socks off that you weren't expecting?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking about it over the break, and this is a little bit of a wonky or dorky answer, but it really does matter. So I could say young voters, I see what everybody else is seeing, I do. And, you know, I'm always blown away every time I look at the non-white numbers, because I've been doing this for so long, this has just never happened. You know, we've seen an increase a little bit, but, I mean, Wendy, I mean, routinely black voters are telling us, you know, that they're 10 points more likely to vote for Donald Trump than they were in 2020. But all of that, you know, I really would, that's all, I don't want to say secondary because it's very important. But what does surprise me and has been happening for almost 6 months now, and it's very, very significant, is that Hispanic voters are now just as like just as certain to say they're going to vote, if not more so, than black voters. And why does that matter? It doesn't even sound that big of a deal, but it is. Because black voters participate at a very, very high rate. And despite what you hear from the media and everybody else, they do. And they have since the era of Jesse Jackson. It's been steadily increasing. Now, they're about 13% nationally. Hispanics are a population in this country that just, they're so important in certain key states, many key states, and they don't vote. They don't flex their political muscles. Like we were just talking about, by the way, you know, there are a lot of those low propensity voters are non-white, and they're the most Republican targets out there for non-white voters. And for the last almost, I would say, because at first when it happened a month or two, I thought maybe it's just statistical noise, but then it was another poll. Then it was in various states. So now I know it's real. And why does that matter? Because when they eventually decide, Wendy, to flex their muscles in a political election, they're going to change the map. They're going to change the map. And so Donald Trump could slip significantly in Dallas, for instance, or, you know, in the white suburbs of Dallas, the affluent suburbs. If those voters in central and southern Texas come out and vote for him, it won't matter. And he'll win that state overwhelmingly. New Mexico would get close. Pennsylvania, your state, very interesting. They're only about 5% of the electorate like they are in Michigan, but they were much more liberal in 2020 than Michigan Hispanics, which was kind of close. It was like a 10-point margin in Michigan. But in Pennsylvania, it was your very typical 60, you know, and change to 30 and change margin that Democrats get for Joe Biden. Not anymore. And the interesting thing, Wendy, is that in the poll we just released in Pennsylvania, those we interviewed that said they voted in 2020, they gave us that margin because we asked them, okay, who did you vote for? And they were honest. And the margin was very similar to what it was now. Now it's tied. So this will matter a lot. And if they crank their share of the vote up in many of these key battleground states, and they really do swing to Trump like every poll is showing, that will change the map dramatically, Wendy. And I don't think people are understanding how much. So, you know, that's the kind of event that makes polls, that gives polling a very bad cycle. You know what I mean? That's the kind of event that can screw pollsters up bad.
Right. Is there,
that's a Truman Dewey moment.
Is there any hope at reaching the white college-educated liberal suburban woman? Or is she lost?
You know, I'm just being real, real honest.
I want you to lie to me.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, people, this is the obsession. You hear this on every network. You hear this, or you'll read about it in every paper and an analysis piece. The fact of the matter is, they have been shifting to the left even long before Donald Trump came along. It was a little bit distorted back in 2004 because of the national security moms. They're just more educated now than they were in 2004. And I, you know, actually like to use the word credentialed, Wendy. You know, I mean, educated is a, you know, is a fungible word, right? What does it take for someone to be educated? But if you were credentialed at a liberal institution, you're very, very, very likely to vote in line with those views. And, you know, even the economy doesn't change their mind. You know, I was talking to Sean Parnell about this, actually. He knew exactly what I was talking about. I mean, we have heard, if you interviewed him, you would know. I mean, if talk to some of them folks who are listening out there, and you'll get what I'm about to say. We literally had them in 22 on every poll tell us that just they didn't care about inflation. They could afford it.
Right.
What about your fellow working man and woman who can't afford it? Well, I mean, that's not as important as, you know, saving this democracy from Orange Man. Like, this is not something, it's going to take a generational change.
Yes.
And I just want to point this out, too. They are not as, you would think they were 50% of the electorate or something, Wendy. You know, I mean, the electorate is roughly 50-50 male, female, even though females are slightly outnumbered males, but not by much, you know, 48-52, 47-53, you know, roughly around there. In a state like Wisconsin, it's often 50-50. Half of that is suburban. Half of the electorate is suburban. Half of that of the suburbs is female. So you're already down to 25%.
Mm-hmm.
Half of that is educated. Mm-hmm. We're all fighting over 13%.
Yes.
We're like obsessing over 13%.
I love it. You just made it so, you put it in my mind, the focus, because they're so frustrating to me. But it should not be the focus. Perhaps some other folks are. Rich Barris, I so appreciate you. How does everybody find you?
Best place, Wendy, is peoplespundit.locals.com. And thanks, Wendy. Appreciate it.
I always enjoy you, sir. Thank you for your time and your expertise. Quick time out. On the flip side of this break, ladies and gentlemen, let's talk about this with Matt Gaetz. Is Mike Johnson compromised? Oh, boy.